You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
He had 42 home runs.
It's crazy. 100.
Yeah, it is, especially because he was just hitting them basically every single day.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Out of these brilliant five, Irvin Santana, Hector Santiago, Kyle Gibson, Phil Hughes, and Jose Berrios.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Everyone knows the pedigree with Buxton. You know what he brings to the table, the power and speed combination, the contact issues. You know all about all that stuff. I guess the real question is...
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Ben Brennan. I am joined by Matt Thompson. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm pretty good. About as amped as I can be to talk about this black hole of a fantasy team we have to do tonight. But we'll try to find the rosy end of the Minnesota Twins here for you.
Yeah, it's definitely...
It's bleak.
It's bleak to say the least, and that's just being real conservative.
Yeah.
But, Matt... Why don't you just give our listeners a quick listen or a quick idea of where they can reach you on Twitter?
Sure. It's MDTomp, FWFB. And you know how it's always prospects and baseball talk on my Twitter all the time. So hit me up, please.
And I am BBrennis, FWFB. Matt, why don't we just jump right on in? Because we do know that this is, like you said, kind of a black hole. We're going to start with catcher. And right now they have Jason Castro, who came over from the Astros. Is this someone that you're looking at just purely in two catcher leagues? Or is that even a tough ad for you?
I have him ranked 30th on my list, and I think that's, in hindsight, it's a little low. We looked into it. There was a crazy stat that I saw earlier this offseason. There's four catchers that have hit double-digit homers the last 4 years, and Jason Castro is one of the four. It's pretty crazy, actually, if you think about that. But, I mean, I think the reason why the Twins signed him, it was for defensive purposes. Supposedly he's – I don't know how much stock you take in framing metrics, but supposedly he's one of the top framers in the league, and the Twins hired that new front office from the Indians, Derek Falvey, and Thad Levine from the Rangers, and those are a couple smart dudes, obviously. So, I mean, if they're in on Castro and his framing abilities, I mean, he could do worse. I guess he's a good source of power. In 2013, he had 18 homers, 2014, 14, 2015, and 2016, he had 11 each. Yes, the batting averages aren't going to be there, but he did hit 276 with 18 homers in 2013. So, I mean, the potential's there. The kid from Stanford, you know, he's a real smart kid. But the batting averages the last 3 years have kind of been a suckhole, a black hole, so to speak. 222, 211, 210. Base percentages are still relatively strong considering the batting averages. So if you play in OBP leagues, I wouldn't be if you're playing in OBP leagues or two catcher leagues, I wouldn't be up. You could do a lot worse than have Castro as your second catcher. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, I'm the second highest ranker on our website for Jason Castro, which is kind of surprising. And I have him at 25th. And I'm second highest.
I'll bump him up a little bit, but I'll probably be right there with you. Pretty close.
I mean, last year I did think that Kurt Suzuki was pretty serviceable. I mean, a 260 batting average isn't great, but it's not terrible. You know, 8 home runs. There's not a ton of catchers, like you said, that are hitting double-digit home runs every single year. You know, he still had 49 RBIs and 345 plate appearance or at-bats. So I do think that Castro could have some decent numbers in this offense, considering that the offense itself is not overly great. But they do have some people who will be on base that it could provide some decent number two catcher value for you in those deep leagues.
I know Justin likes to punt batting average in a lot of his leagues, and if he's in a two catcher league, I could see him getting Castro. And coincidentally, on that, Justin has him as the highest ranked guy on our. He's the highest of us of the six rankers on our website. Justin is the most aggressive on Castro.
Yeah,
by a few spots over you. So, I mean, I could see him being a guy. The power is at the catching position is pretty valuable because it's been a pretty bleak. I think it obviously the position as a whole is going to be better this go around, but you just wonder how much. There's a lot of high upside pieces, but they're also really young, and gambling on a young catcher is a really hard thing to do.
Exactly. I mean, personally, we were talking about it before the podcast. I personally like the backup John Ryan Murphy. I do know that his season last year wasn't anything spectacular, to say the least. But I do think that he has potential upside considering what his age is. I think that if he was given a full season of at-bats, he could provide some decent stats. But as of right now, Castro, I think, is going to give you decent low-end number two catcher stats.
Yeah, and, I mean, another not to talk about Castro the whole podcast, but another thing that's an added bonus is kind of what we talked about. I mean, Castro's going to be in the lineup for his defense. So the offensive bar is so low. You know what I mean? It's going to take an awful lot for him to get benched. And if you're in a two-catcher league or an AL-only league and you want at-bats, Castro is a good option because he's going to get them.
Exactly. Why don't we move on to first base? And
do we have to?
we could skip it, but there's still going to be players at first.
Yeah, no.
I mean, we got Joe Mauer, who used to be good and no longer is. No. And we basically have him platooning with Byung-ho Park. Which neither is overly impressive. Do you expect to gain any value whatsoever from first base at all for the Twins this year?
Not really. I don't even know what type of league I would be okay with rostering Joe Mauer as my corner infielder, yet alone first baseman. I don't, OBP leagues, he gets a sizable bump. I mean, he's a strong on base percentage guy. I mean, he doesn't strike out, so that's a plus. His strikeout rate's about 16%, but he offers no power, no speed, and the batting average hasn't been what it used to be. I mean, he hit 324 in 319 in 2012 and 2013. Now you look at him in 2015 and 2016, he's down to 265, 261. Like, that's not going to cut it. 102 WRC plus for the Twins, hitting in a three spot most of the season. That's a little bit above league average offense, not adjusting for the position, not adjusting for the spot in the batting order. I mean, it's easy to blame Joe Mauer for where the Twins are because they invested so much money into him, but it's not. It's just the lack of development in other positions. And Mauer's the hometown kid. And I mean, I think I'm more interested in the potential DH combination of Park and Vargas because I think Mauer's going to play first base no matter what. But I think Vargas and Park offer the cheap power that you can find, and Kenny's Vargas can actually hit for a little bit of average. So, and Park battled injuries last year. I know we're covering three players here at once, but Park got hit in the knee by Chris Sale, and after he got off to a decent start, came back and was terrible. Then he had a thumb injury and a wrist injury, and he will not be that bad this season. Byung-ho Park, I'm going to go on a limb, and Byung-ho Park is going to have value in 12 team leagues this year because I think the power's there. And he's too good of a hitter to do what he did last year. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I do think that Park will be able to have some large team value. Basically, I may not be in the same Park as you, that 12 teams, but I think anything 14 and over, 15 and over, somewhere around there, he's going to have some value. For me, Mauer, I think, still will have some value. I think that he'll be able to. And this is me just going out on a limb. I think he'll be able to recuperate some of that batting average. I think that if he hits 280 with the 11 home runs and gets like 60 RBIs, I think that's not terrible from a corner infield spot, especially if you're in like a 15 or 16 team league. That's basically the only way that he really holds any value.
I think if he gets enough at-bats, if he gets 400, 500 at-bats, I think he's a guy that can hit 25, 30 home runs still. I'm still a believer. He's going to strike out a ton. The batting average is going to be low. But as your corner infielder, I think you're going to get him off the waiver wire. You're not going to draft him. The value is so low. I think it's all surplus value is what you're going to get. And you could do worse at the corner by the end of the year. Puck's going to have some value. He's too good of a hitter. I watch, the swing is – he's got leverage. It's a little long. If he can cut it down and he just needs to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing.
If you were in an OBP league, how many teams do you have for Mauer to have some value for you as a corner infielder? 12 teams? 14?
No, more than that. Probably upwards of 20.
Okay. Why don't we move on to our next player, and this is going to be basically the best hitter that the Twins have, and that's going to be Brian Dozier. Brian Dozier last year in 615 at-bats. He had 42 home runs.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, it is, especially because he was just hitting them basically every single day, it felt like. His batting average came up an immense amount from what the last seasons have been, it feels like, because he hit .268, and while that's not necessarily great, that's a big improvement for him. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what Dozier is going to bring to the table this year? Because last year seemed a bit like an anomaly.
Well, I mean, to make it nice and easy, I mean, he changed his swing plane, it looked like, last year, and he kind of came into it with the mindset of, I'm just going to hit the ball harder and with more loft and just hit the ball in the air. And his batted ball profile supports that. 29 homers in the second half, though. I mean, that's unreal, and that's not going to happen again. I'd bet my house on it. So, I mean, obviously, I'm not pegging Dozier to hit 42 homers again. I mean, I do think he might settle in the 33-34 range, which is still very, very nice. But the thing I'm more interested in with Dozier is the stolen bases. They kind of came back. He was at 21 in 2014. He dipped down into 12 in 2015 and more at-bats. But they bounced back up to 18 this year, and I think that's a sneaky source of value for him, is the 18 stolen bases, especially nowadays. What do you think?
I personally think that him batting leadoff is going to be very helpful for him, at least in the stolen base opportunities, because they need to be able to try to generate some offense, and if they're going to be using him in the leadoff spot and he's going to be either hitting solo home runs or getting singles, then they're got to try to generate the offense somehow. They're going to basically give him the green light because he does know how to steal. And even though he's 29, going to be 30 years old at some point this year, he still is a good, smart base runner who does have some speed. So I think for me, it makes sense because if you look at it, he basically had the next person in terms of runs scored for the team, I believe, was Mauer at 68. He had 104. So you do know that he's like, he's going to do whatever he has to do to get in the scoring position. Now, 42 of those came from his home runs, but, you know, basically that's exactly the difference between him and Mauer anyway. So,
yeah,
it's basically they still, while they don't score a ton, he puts himself in position to at least get driven in by other people concerning how bad that lineup is.
I guess I'm going to ask you the obvious question, too. I mean, there's trade rumors swirling and stuff. Do you think Brian Dozier's with the Twins on opening day?
I still do think that he is, just because I think, personally for me, I find it very hard for teams to actually go and move a player this late in the
winter, off-season.
Technically. Yeah, this late in the offseason, because you don't see it. Now, typically you see some smaller trades, some smaller pieces moved around spring training, but you typically don't see as many big deals. So for me, if it hasn't happened, I don't think it's going to, because I can't see what's possibly going to pop up at this point that's going to make the Twins want to do it when nothing's popped up to this point in time that's made them pull the trigger.
I mean, I agree with you. I think they're just kind of holding out. I mean, I'm going to ask you another quick question, not to put you on the spot. I mean, how much do you think his value changes significantly if he goes to, say, L.A.? I mean, I kind of think it does. I think he'll drop in the batting order.
And he'll definitely drop in a batting order, which will probably take a stolen base opportunities away, and his runs. His power, obviously, I don't expect that power to stay the same. And the reason I say that is because I'm the lowest of him on all of our rankers. I have him 8th. You have him 6th. You and I are the 2 lowest on the entire site.
Yeah.
And for me to have him eighth, it's just because like I expect like Carpenter and Segura and Kinsler to have huge years, and I'm the highest on all three of those players to everyone else in the entire site. So for me, that's the reason I have him dropped. It's because I expect him to hit like 25 home runs yeah. and maybe steal 15 bases. So that takes a significant amount of his power and stolen bases away, takes away the runs and some of the RBIs.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was going back and forth between Brian Dozier and D. Gordon. And ultimately, I went with D ahead of him because I think the stolen base floor is higher. Not that I don't think Dozier is going to provide value, because obviously I think so. He's, I have him ranked sixth, but I'm with you. I think the home runs take a step back. Like I said, I think 32, 33, 34 is kind of be where he's going to be at, not 42.
Yeah.
I still think the averages are going to stay where they are. I mean, there's nothing unsustainable about that. He hits the ball in the air a lot, so he's going to be prolonged. If he's not hitting the ball out of the park as much, the average might drop because of the, you know, the fly balls are going to turn into outs.
Exactly.
But, I mean, on the plus side, I'm trying to figure out. I mean, look, I got the Dodgers just pulled up here. If he was traded to the Dodgers, I mean, I still think he either hits fifth or sixth, or he hits second, and I think
he's either way, it's less value. I think he's more likely to hit second, and just given the regular or just the
push everyone else down a spot. Seager,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it makes more sense for that lineup for them to have him there rather than have him be the main potential source of power in the five or six hole. Because while he is a power bat, he still knows how to get on base, and he still knows how to be a smart base runner. You want to put that type of player at two. So for me, it makes more sense there.
Yeah.
Matt, why don't we move into our next player, and that's going to be talking about Miguel Sano. And I wasn't as big of a fan of Sano as others were coming into the season.
Me neither, actually.
He basically disappointed a lot of people in terms of what they were going to expect, which is basically how I expected him to play out. He still hit for a ton of power, but the average wasn't that good. It was quite terrible, frankly. He has basically no stolen base power, or no stolen base. He has one stolen base on the entire year. So yeah,
speed's not the game here. Yeah. No way.
And the offense just isn't very good, so he's not going to be producing a ton of runs because there's not a lot of base baseball players behind him that can drive him in.
No.
And there's only like two people in front of him that he's going to drive in. And when Dozier's hitting himself solo home runs, there's not a lot of people on base. So what can we expect from Miguel Sano now that he takes over full time at third base?
Well, I mean, I think obviously he's not going to be an asset batting average whatsoever. The contact percentage is just simply too low. It's below 60% at the major league level last year. That's puts him at a ceiling of probably 230-ish at the at 230, 240 at the max. I mean, I just don't see that translating. But one thing I'm looking forward to is, I mean, I'm looking for him to be healthy more. He missed all of June with a hamstring injury. He had elbow and back injuries in the second half that cost him severe amounts of playing time. I mean, he had more at bats in the second half than he did in the first half, though. But I mean, he was exactly the same player both halves, 14 homers, 224, with 227 expected batting average in the first half, and 13 homers, 237, with 222 expected batting average in the second half. I mean, the metrics are on this guy, though. He does hit the ball hard. If you're in OBP leagues, he has added value. When I play, I don't think I play in any leagues that are batting average, to be honest, anymore. I think every league I play in is OBP-based, so that might explain a little bit of the ranking in my players sometimes when they fluctuate. It's hard to kick yourself out of those habits, you know, when you're preparing for all your leagues. But if you're in an OBP league, I'd bump Sano up a little bit because the patience is still there. And despite being injured, and obviously because he played through injuries last year, the plate skills didn't deteriorate by any means. And he's a solid DFS guy against lefties because he had a 1080 OPS in the first half. So that's another added bonus. But I don't like them playing him at third. I wish they would just kind of make him the DH and leave him alone and let him hit, because he's ultimately going to be a DH. So why just not do it now?
I agree with that.
But I don't get it.
They don't have anyone else at third, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, no, I know. But, I mean, yeah, they don't.
For me, I mean, I'm lowest on Sano. This seems to be a trend that I'm lower on Twins players than other owners or other rankers on our staff.
Yeah, but I have him 13. I have him 18. So, yeah, at third base, obviously.
Yeah, basically, like, I still expect him to have similar numbers to what he had this year. Maybe like a 245 batting average, 250. Maybe it's a little bumped up.
That's aggressive, yeah.
And yeah, exactly. Just being aggressive, I think maybe like another year of development helps him get that up slightly. You know, I don't really know if he's going to have more of an uptick in RBIs. He could maybe have like closer to 80 if he gets another 100 at bats, and that's if he doesn't get any injuries or anything, which we saw him get injured a few times last year. Yeah. So we'll just have to see how he's able to power through that. But yep. I think him having one set position and him just not that having to help. Fluctuate between right, third, and DH, I think that will help him. It will help him. And we've seen this with Carlos Santana, basically. We've seen this with a lot of players. When they fluctuate between having to play a position and having to like play DH, or it screws up what their mentality is going into the game.
Yep. That creature's a habit, and every time that throws up the routine, man, it's not good.
Exactly. There was one player, I can't remember who it was, but someone in the American League that – when he was like playing as a DH, he was like a 250 hitter or something like that. But when he was playing first base, he was hitting to like the tune of like 280 or something, and he was hitting for a lot more power.
Interesting, yeah.
Don't remember who it was. I wish I knew, but they do become creatures of habit. You know, sitting in the dugout, getting four at bats. You know, it's tough to stay warm. You know, sometimes they just like the routine of being able to go in, go out, go in, go out, and you know, being at third base probably will make him more comfortable. So I can see some slight improvements if that is, in fact, the case for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a Steamer projection right now. Obviously, they have the power output down. In about 75 more at-bats, they have him hitting only four more home runs, which I think is a little bit different. But, I mean, they have him slashing .241 with a .333 OBP and 29 homers and 84 RBIs. I mean, if you get a Sano owner – and a snow owner right now in a keeper dynasty format would take that any day because it's been a long wait for him. I mean, he was one of the most hyped prospects in the world coming up. I mean, the Pirates were all over him and a bunch of teams. Minnesota ended up being the winner. I think there's a film out there about him actually when he was a minor league prospect a kid in the Dominican coming up, how highly touted he was. So just obviously the skill's still there. I mean, we're not burying the guy by any means. He's only 23 years old. It's insane. He'll be 24 opening day. I'm still buying shares of Sano in Keeper Dynasty if I can. But it's a real tricky thing to evaluate because the position going forward. Obviously, they got him at third. That's not the answer. I think eventually you either move him to first or DH, and you can't really move him to first with Maurer there because they love Maurer. He's a hometown kid and he's making so much money. But I think you have to move him off third and just let him hit. I mean, I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I do think that at some point, I think when's Maurer's contract up in 2020, I think?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure his is up in like 2020. And that's, I think, I'm going to look it up. But that's basically when I would expect him to move over to first. Now, like I inherited Dynasty League for head-to-head this year, in which I have Sano on the team, and I honestly wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with him because in head-to-head I can work with the batting average and stuff, but I do know that there's going to be a lot more time. He signed through 2018, yes. Joe Maurer, so
yeah.
I could see that after 2018, so in two seasons, I could see Sano moving over to first, but you know that's still a long ways away.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we move over to our shortstop, and that's going to be Jorge Polanco. Jorge Polanco had a .282 average last year in the 245 at bats that he had, but not a lot else in terms of counting stats. Is this a player that you're considering at all from middle infield position? Because he's clearly not going to be starting shortstop for one of your teams.
I think so. And you got to remember a lot of the playing time he didn't get was till after the Eduardo Nunez deal freed up the shortstop position because he's kind of a utility guy. But he's been a high contact guy throughout his major league career. And I think he's looking at a guy. The upside's not immense, not this year. I mean, he's still young though. He's 23 years old. He will be 23 on opening day still, and I think you're looking at a guy. I think 280 is a little rich, but he could hit 270, and he could, if everything breaks right, he could get double digit homers and steals for you this year at the cost of nothing. I know that's not the most exciting upside, but I mean, it's value, and it's might be a little sneaky value that someone in your league doesn't know about. So I'm not completely out on Polanco. I'd actually take a shot on him in deep leagues.
I would too. I think in 16 plus leagues, I would take a shot at him if it's a redraft, maybe as a very, very last round pick. If you're in like a 20 team league and it's like a redraft, I would definitely take him in one of the last couple rounds, just because I think that as a full-time starter, anyone is going to be able to provide you value, and that's the type of thing that you look for in those really, really deep leagues is at-bats, because you have so many injuries and stuff that sometimes you're forced to have to play a player that's not great, but the amount of at-bats that they get can still be helpful. So I do think that's one thing that Polanco brings to the table is the consistency of always being able to get those at-bats.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I think you could do a lot worse in deep leagues.
Why don't we move into the outfield, where there's not a lot to talk about outside of Buxton and Kepler. We can talk a little bit about Robbie Grossman, who will be platooning with Eddie Rosario. Why don't you tell me about what you think of the outfield as a whole?
Well, obviously, there's two guys that stand out. I mean, we'll get to Buxton in a minute. I think the guy that I would like to talk to now about now is Max Kepler. He had a breakout season for the Twinkies in 16. 396 at bats. He showed the power. 17 homers. 20 doubles. Yeah, the average wasn't strong. 235. 309 OBP though. Obviously, he's young. He's new to. He's been a full-time baseball player for. I mean, since what, 2009? It hasn't been long. His family, I think he's from a family of, his mom and dad are both like ballet dancers or something in Germany. Like so they have athleticism. It's in the family. The left-handed stroke. He's extremely raw, but I think he's going to be a frustrating player to own in fantasy realms, because I think he's going to go. It's going to be a long time until he reaches his full potential. You just have to have a lot of patience with him. And I think obviously that's going to hinder, like, you know, your team, because he's going to have a lot of ups and downs. But he made strong strides in contact percentage, hard contact, power, speed, the skills versus lefties. He's going to be a platoon guy, I think, at least initially. But the only problem is with platoon guys is once you become one, it's really hard to break out of that. So it might cap at bats and everything like that. But there's a breakout on the horizon. I just don't know if I'm going to pay full price for it, because there's a lot of variables in the way.
I agree with you. What would you expect his batting average to be this year?
With growth, I would say. I mean, like I said, last year he was at 235. I could see 250.
Is 260 too much to expect from a player like this, who does have just the talent and the skills to be able to hit a lot better than what he produced last year, and you could see it for stretches at a time?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think he's proven he's a guy that could easily go out and hit 20 homers and steal 10 bags next year. I am just not going to bet on it, because he scares me. He's so raw and athletic and toolsy and stuff. Like, I get all that. The approach is pretty decent. Doesn't strike out a lot. Walks a pretty good chunk. It's just he's so raw, and there's other options going around him that I would rather take. I mean, I'm looking up him on NFBC. I'm trying to find him right now, so I'm kind of stalling a little bit here. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on Kepler? I'll get back to you with this.
I mean, personally, I do think that we're going to see a season similar to what he had last year. I do think he's able to hit 20 home runs this year. He may be able to get to 10 stolen bases. It just really depends on how things break. I'm completely in the same boat as you, that around a 250 batting average to 260 is what I could expect. I do think that he could end up being the second best hitter on the Twins when this season is said and done, considering that they have a bunch of young guys. It is nice to see that they could gain a lot from what he brings to the table. So it's like you said, he is very toolsy. He's got a lot of talent. He's got a lot of athleticism. It's just, he's got to be able to put it all together, but it's tough when he's only had a few, he's had less than 10 years playing baseball. It's just, it takes a while for that stuff to just come together. So I do think that we'll see significant strides in some areas this year and some minor ones in others, but I think it would be pleasant. I just won't pay full price just like you.
Yeah. See, I'm looking at the NFBC data now. They got Kepler as the 53rd outfielder off the board, 231 overall. I mean, obviously that can fluctuate, but the guys directly in front of him, Yasiel Puig, Randall Grichuk, Eric Thames, the guys behind him, Hunter Renfroe, Rajay Davis, Jacoby Ellsbury, Matt Holliday, I'm not taking Kepler over those guys. I won't do that. So I guess I'm out on him this year.
Yeah, it really depends on how things fall for me. I personally am not going to be in a ton of redraft leagues. Mostly the leagues that I'm in I've inherited either keeper leagues or last year's startup leagues for Dynasty, basically. And I don't have them. So for me, I'm a guy who likes to trade, but it's not that I'm looking to trade for him this year either, just because he's not the type of player that fits into the mold that I'm looking for when I'm trying to build a contender. I think that he's more suited for a rebuilding team, and if I was doing a redraft, he's not one of the players I'm looking at as one of my outfield or outfield bench spots. He's just someone I'm waiting to see how he develops.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I guess we're running a little long here, so let's move on to like Byron Buxton. I mean, everyone knows the pedigree with Buxton. You know what he brings to the table, the power and speed combination, the contact issues. You know all about all that stuff. I guess the real question is, what do you think the ultimate ceiling is for this guy? Is he still going into last season, he was the top fantasy prospect on a lot of people's boards. Is he still that for you?
For me, I think that...
Still that player. Obviously, he's not a prospect. Is he still that type of player?
I feel he is. I feel he's got some... He still needs time to hit that ceiling. Like, I feel like in the next two or so years, you could see all the lights turning on in his head for what he's capable of doing. I had picked him up in a dynasty league, and I was reluctant to trade him, but I ended up moving him basically for like him and Aledmys Diaz for like Chapman and JD Martinez. So for me, I was extremely happy with the return because yeah. I was a contending team. And I was just like, I was willing to let someone else take the headache because as a contending team, you can't deal with that if you have a deep league.
I sold him last year, too. I sold him him and another prospect that I cannot remember right now. I sold for Randall Grichuk and Jose Abreu in a keep forever league. So I went for it because I had to hold it first base. So, but I mean, I look at Buxton, he's coming in with a lot of momentum. He was in the minor league. Remember, he got demoted last year for struggling. He tore up AAA after demotion. He hit 305, 359, 568, perfect 7 for 7 on stolen base attempts, and he hit 11 homers in AAA in 49 games. So, I mean, it shows you what he can do. But then he got called up to the majors in September, had that call-up. He hit 287, 357, 653 with 9 homers in 113 September plate appearances. So he showed the flashes again after the call-up. I still don't think it's going to be a really frustrating player to own, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did a 240 season with 10 homers and 25 steals.
See, for me, I've noticed, and I've heard this from a lot of different people in the industry, that he just needs time to get acclimated to each system or into each level. And when they kind of rushed him up, to be fair, and it really screwed up how he is able to develop. And the Twins, when I think of the Twins, I'm not thinking of like a great organization in terms of how they've handled their prospects over the last few years, to say the least. Just based on what they've done with him, I think that they were smart to demote him last year, and they kept him down for a solid amount of time to let him learn exactly what he needed to fix. And then you kind of saw the gears turning when he came up in September. I could easily see not as significant of an improvement as that, but I could personally see like a 265 average with maybe like 12 to 15 home runs and the 20 steals.
See, yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm right there. I can see why you see that, but I mean, I'm looking at his NFBC data, and the value is where you draft him, right? I mean, that's just determining what you have. Buxton is going over outfielders. He's getting picked ahead of Carlos Gomez, Marcelo Ozuna, Jay Bruce, Dexter Fowler, Cole Calhoun, Ender Inciarte, Kevin Kiermaier, Jock Peterson, Hunter Pence, Keon Broxton, my personal friend, best friend, actually, and and Carlos Beltran. Like, I think that's insane. And
I personally do think that that is insane, because it just, that's extremely high for a player that hasn't fully proven everything. And I would like to see him be able to put it together before I go take him that high. Now, like I said, I do like him, and I personally have him higher than anyone on our staff rankings. I have him 32nd among outfielders, which is extremely high, because I know that he has the potential to do that, and I'm probably a little bit too high on him. But if I'm looking through a majority of the rankings, I just, because of, I know what he's capable of doing, I saw the light turn, I could see for part of this season him having significant improvements. Now I could see him having some ups and downs as the season progresses, but I could see that he does start off relatively hot, and you may be able to move him after a quick hot start. So
yeah, I guess what I'm saying in the deeper league, you can't take him that high because you don't have the room. You need solid outfielders like in that range. That's outfield two, outfield three range. You know what I mean? That's outfielder three range for your team, fantasy team in a 15 team league. And you need a stable guy like that. And Buxton in a league like that size, if you gamble on him, can hurt you significantly. But on the upside with that, in a 10 to 12 team league, that's borderline fourth outfielder, waiver wire fodder, and that's extreme high upside play. So it's very much going to be dependent on what your size of your league is. But I guess with all the thoughts on the offense there, we pretty much covered it. Do you want to share your thoughts? I guess since we're running short on time, out of these brilliant five of Ervin Santana, Hector Santiago, Kyle Gibson, Phil Hughes, and Jose Berrios, who are you the highest on for this year and the lowest, I guess?
The two players I'm highest on are Ervin Santana and Berrios, because
yeah, that's fair. I agree both of that.
Berrios just has a ton of upside. You and I at least as far as I know, I've listened to you talk about the upside, and I've agreed basically at every single point. He gets a lot of Ks. He knows how to work the strike zone.
Throws a lot of strikes, but he throws bad strikes, and it's. He throws a lot of strikes, but they're bad strikes. And I think this is where the signing of somebody like Jason Castro would come in and play. Not that Suzuki was a bad catcher, and not that I'm blaming all this on the catcher, because Berrios was awful last year. But I think there's definite room for growth here. He might have came up a little early, but he went back to AAA and dominated. So you can't fault the Twins for pushing him up higher again, because it's the only next step. I mean,
exactly.
I would like them to just make him their number five starter all season and just don't mess with him. Let him throw 180 innings and cut him off and let him cruise and go at it next year. I mean, just build up the innings, stay healthy, stay consistent, and take the ball every fifth day. That's what he needs to do. I mean, realistically, the Twins are going to win 65, 70 games. So letting Berrios start out there isn't going to hurt you, that's for sure.
Exactly, and I do think that the reason that they had Buxton and Berrios up so early last year was because they're trying to bring some faith back to the fan base. They're trying to excite the fan base, because they did have players like Sano when they had brought in Park last year, and you know, they still have Dozier. They had players that were good, and they were trying to help develop the team, and I think that's part of the reason that they brought them up earlier than they probably should have been. But then you put them back down, they play well, and then you bring them back up for a short cup of coffee at the end of the season, and look at how they were able to produce. In terms of Santana, he's been solid in the past. We've seen it. We've seen that ERA low.
He was solid last year.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's not a big K guy, but he gets enough Ks that he's able to be solid. He's not going to get wins because he's on a shitty Twins team, but the ERA will be
good. For now, he could get traded.
Exactly. I don't know if he will or will not be traded. I would have thought he would have been traded last year personally, but he'll still have decent ERA numbers. The whip is going to be around 1.15 to 1.25, which isn't terrible considering what he has to work with. So I do think that he's going to be able to provide you some decent value. I know that you like. Yeah, exactly. I know that you like both of these guys as much as you can like anyone in the Twins Twins rotation. So what are your thoughts on Arvin Santana?
Yeah, like I think you nailed it. I think he's a realistic guy that you can peg to not hurt your ratios. He's not going to get you that strikeouts, but I mean, if you can take care of that with your earlier starting pitchers, or maybe get some high end relievers, or even play the long game here. I know this is kind of a weird strategy, but draft Arvin Santana in the later rounds, the last couple rounds, and reach ahead and maybe grab a high strikeout reliever like a Kyle Bearclaw or a Andrew Miller, and you pair them there, and that makes up the strikeouts.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, so, and that's the type of strategy I follow in some deep leagues, is I'll go with a lot of high K guys, whether it's relievers or not, and that provides you decent ratios because – you know, if you're able to win those ratios and Ks, you can get cheap wins. It's not hard. And eventually, K guys do seem to make it into the closer roles. So sometimes it is nice that you get to luck into that. So that's the type of strategy that I would have also suggested. Now, in terms of the bullpen, basically, Kinsler is going to – it looks like he's probably going to be the closer going forward. But do you think that if someone has a hot spring training that they just take over the role? Or do you think that they'll just give it to Kinsler?
They have a lot of guys that I like. I mean, we're not going to spend too long on the Twins bullpen because I think Kinsler's a placeholder. Perkins should be back. I think when Perkins comes back, he's going to be the guy until he gets hurt again or whatever. The guy that I like, I'll just give you under the radar guy. I mean, Ryan Pressly's a decent option. You know, Trevor May, he's been bouncing up and down for a while. The guy that I like as an under the radar save guy out here, if Perkins falters, is JT Schwarga.
That's the exact same guy I wanted to ask
you. He throws hard, and that's really all you need. The Twins have a lot of relievers that throw hard. They have Jake Reed, Pat Light, the guy from the Red Sox last year, throws hard. They have Nick Birdie, the brother of Zach Birdie. He throws hard. They've built their bullpen on a lot of flamethrowers, and it's not really worked so far. But I mean, there's Ryan Pressly's a guy with some upside we mentioned. Whatever is the guy that I am looking for in super deep 30-team leagues, late round flyer kind of guy, because he might be the guy that rises to the top and takes that closer job long term. Because Kinsler's not the long term guy; he's 32 years old. Perkins is 34 years old, so they're going to need to get younger at that position too.
Do you think that Tyler Duffy is going to be up this year and be able to provide you any value?
It's possible him and Adalberto Mejia come up. They're serviceable guys and keep the whip down. Probably 7.5 strikeout per nine guys. The walks are a wild card. Duffy throws a little better command than Mejia now. Both should settle in at 2.5 to 3 walks per nine, which is pretty decent. I think they're both long-term mid-rotation or starting pitcher number 4 or 5 guys, probably number 4 guys in a long-term like rear rotation, so probably 5 or 6 starter in your fantasy rotation. Kind of like Arvin Santana now would be, you know what I mean? Kind of settle in as a not going to blow anybody's doors off, but they're going to keep the ball in the yard and not walk anybody and keep the ratios clean.
Exactly. Matt, is there anyone else that's on this abysmal team that you want to potentially cover in any aspect?
We'll mention him in passing. I don't want to get too far. And Danny Santana is a nice, interesting option. Offensive first speed guy. Makes some contact. Struggling a little bit there. Switch hitter. Can play center field, and he can play shortstop. So that's a little intriguing. AL-only play, possibly, if he gets enough time. Daniel Pelka is an interesting guy. He might come up this year, but it's going to take somebody to falter out there in Kepler or somebody. Corner outfielder, first baseman that can hit low batting averages, but he can hit 25, 30 home runs. And we miss Eddie Rosario. I think he's a nice, decent combination of speed and power, but he doesn't make enough contact for it to produce. You never know. Hitters change. Development's not linear, so he could find his missing stride. But, I mean, it's kind of bleak. There's some talent at the bottom end of the system, but even that's not that great. It's probably a minor league system that falls somewhere in the 22 to 26 range overall, because I'm not that high on Nick, like some of the top guys. I'm not that high on Nick Gordon, as you'll find out in the prospect mini pod that you should listen to right after this to get your Twins fix. But Minnesota is not in a really good situation right now. But we made the best out of the fantasy purposes. We found you some diamonds, found you some guys to avoid. If deep leaguers should have deep league, people in deep league should be able to take advantage of this roster and find some useful pieces.
I totally agree. I mean, I have a couple leagues in which I'm in 16 or to 20 team leagues that have somewhere upwards of 40 players per team. So for me, I do look for those deep league players. You know, like JT was a player that I kept an eye on last year, just because if he ever stepped into a closer role, I do think that he'll get you cheap saves, and if you're in that deep of a league, any save mm-hmm. you can get here or there is valuable.
Yep.
So Matt, why don't you once again tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Keep doing those prospect pods and those prospect mini pieces, man. Please read the content that goes in there. The content is more thorough than the prospect pods because I actually have time to sit down and do research and all that stuff about that. So check those out. Obviously, check out all the team previews. All you guys, Ben, everybody, Ben, Chuck, everybody's doing a great job. It's been really appreciated to guys like Evan and everybody stepping up. Joining the Friends of Fantasy Benefits crew, or in your case, getting expanded roles, which is great. So look forward to hearing Ben more this year. And it's just living life, chilling, and doing prospects. So hit me up on Twitter, MDTompFWFB.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. I will be hosting our Tuesday show for this coming season. I also host the Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast, so give that a listen if you are in basketball leagues. Like Matt was saying, just give a listen to our prospect pods, read all the in-depth analysis that we put onto the website. And if you guys ever have questions, you can always reach us at Fantasy
Benefits on Twitter. Yep.
Yeah, Fantasy Benefits on Twitter. And
give us a 5-star review. Let us know.
Yes, give us a 5-star review because we will be able to place you or attempt to place you in one of our listener leagues. And I think we also have prizes that we are still working out.
Yes, some sort of T-shirt giveaway that I'm not aware of all the details. But, give us that 5-star review. Give us that screenshot and post it on one of our Twitter feeds or Fantasy Benefits Twitter feed. And we will be sure to put you in the front of the line to get into those leagues. So those are always fun. Think you can beat Ben? Well, join a league with him and you'll find out.
All right. So until next time, Matt, it was good doing our first show together.
Yeah.
And for the rest of the listeners, have a fantastic baseball season.